Welcome back. I'm sure everyone's going to go to bed early tonight. So we're investigating why these are the true remedies. Why are they the true remedies? We've looked at the importance of pure air, the most vital element needed for life. We've looked at Dr. Sunshine. We've looked at the importance of sleep. And now I want to look at the third law, which is temperance. Temperance means not taking anything into the body that will harm it. So there are some things that should never enter the human body. And what we're going to have a look at what they are and why they should not enter the human body. And there are some things that should be done in moderation. So basically with moderation, we can say all good things. Even good things can turn to poison if overdone. We had a young man doing our program who had an eating disorder, and he would eat. He would eat four loaves of bread. He would just eat huge amounts. And then the accuser of the brethren, and you've read in Revelation chapter 12, where I think it's verse 10, where it says that the accuser of the brethren was cast down, who accuses them before our God day and night. He never rests. Have you noticed that accusing voice whenever you do a little mistake? And that's what creates the guilt, yeah? But you know, we have a merciful Saviour. And do you remember what he said to the woman who was caught in adultery? I forgive you, but sin no more. That's the voice you'll hear from God. But the voice you'll hear from the accuser of the brethren, you're no good, you'll never be able to do it. Look what you've done. And so that's what this young man did. He'd eat four loaves of bread and all the rest, and then he just guilt. But the reason I'm telling you the story is that he was picked up by the police one day. Well, not picked up by the police. He was just pulled over doing a routine breathalyzer, and they found alcohol in his blood, and he had not drunk any alcohol. He had put so much food into his stomach, it had started to ferment. And the fermentation gave off alcohol, which went into his blood, and he was picked up on the breathalyzer. And, of course, when he said to them, I haven't had anything to drink, they thought, he's lying. So even good things, if overdone, can turn to poison. And the old saying says, all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. Do you have that saying in Sweden? In other words, you can overwork. Isn't that true? And I mentioned the health retreats where there was one health retreat. I was talking to a lady and I said, why did it close down? She said, well, I was doing all the cooking and all the cleaning and all the massage. It's just too much, too much, too much. So it's something you have to guard against. And what helps us is these laws. People say to me, Barbara, you don't overwork, do you? And I say, no, then I'm no good to anyone. I take breaks. I go to bed early. And I have found that these true remedies keep me going. They keep me going. They are the true remedies. But you know what they also are? They're the true preventers. The preventers of getting into disease. So God says no overwork, yeah?
But then a lot of times that people don't have the people, so the other people think they have to do more of the work.
That's true. That is true. And so that's, and we'll be talking about those sorts of things when we talk about setting up the health retreat. That is true. And all play and no work makes Jack a very poor boy. There needs to be a balance of all of that. When you teach your children to work from a young age, then you've got time to play with them. And they are both very, very important. But you know, play comes after work, isn't that true? My daughter said to me one day, well, did these children work hard this morning? I said, what did they do? She said, they weeded my whole garden. I said, what are you doing this afternoon? She said, we're going skating. Now, if Emma had weeded the whole garden, that would have taken her all day. Then there's no skating. And, you know, idle hands make mischief. keep the children busy, especially the teenagers. Keep them busy. So can you see, with moderation, it's really a balance. It's all a balance. But there are some things that should never enter the human body if you're looking for optimum performance. And I think the reason we're here is because we are looking for optimum performance. And the reason your guests will come to your health retreat is because they're looking for optimum performance. So these things must not enter. And when I say sugar, I'm referring to the pure crystallized acid that's been extracted from the sugarcane plant. In his book, Pure, White and Deadly, that's the name of his book, Dr. Yutkin, he's British, and he wrote this book about, I think 30 years ago now. It wasn't very popular then, but it's becoming popular now because there is an awareness of the danger of sugar. One of the chapters in his book is, this should be banned. It's so deadly. So what it does, it gets the blood sugar level up very high, very fast. And immediately the brain says to the pancreas, quick, we want a corresponding amount of insulin to get it down. But because there was so much glucose in the blood, too much insulin's released, now we're going too low. And the person's almost passing out. What's that called? Hypoglycemia. Hypo is low blood sugar. So what's the first thing they reach for, most people, when they're feeling like they're going to pass out? More sugar. Will that get it up? Oh, yes. That'll get it up. But then it's not long after that you get the corresponding dump. So there's this whiplash of up, down, up, down. Now, the first thing that happens there is the cell starts to resist the insulin. It's called insulin resistance. You've heard of it? Mm-hmm. It's almost as if the cell wall says, I'm sick of the sight of you. So you get insulin resistance. So you know what that means? The glucose is still in the blood. And so the brain says to the pancreas, quick, we need more insulin. And the pancreas doesn't realize, and the brain doesn't realize, the problem isn't insulin, the problem is the insulin resistance. And eventually, the pancreas just says, we're done. We've got nothing more to give. Well, what's going to happen to the glucose in the blood? It's going to spill out into the urine. Diabetes mellitus means sweet urine. There's no mention of it in Hippocrates' writings. That's 400 years BC. And the first documentation of this was probably early 1800s. You see, the slave trade was built up to man the sugarcane fields. And what they found was that the Black Plague started. And we know the Black Plague was just the sewage in the streets. But they found that in the countries it wasn't so prolific because the country people couldn't afford the sugar. It was more the wealthy people. Mm-hmm. But the slave trade mostly has been abolished. We've got another form of slavery today. And this is what you'll find in the health retreat. You can get addicts coming who are addicted to sugar. Yeah. They're addicted to that high. So what helps? Nourishment helps. Nourishing the cells with the vegetable juices, the vegetables and the fruit juices. The laws of health implemented will naturally allow the body bit by bit to detox. So sugar has to be eliminated. And we don't need to eat sugar. We've got things like dates. We've got things like maple syrup, honey, raw honey. Caffeine. Why is caffeine a problem? Your guests are going to want to know that. Why is it a problem? Let me show you. Here is the nerve cell. And the nerve cell is different to other cells because the nerve cell communicates with the next nerve cell via little chemical messengers. And the chemical messengers come in, then they're sent down the arm. This is the arm. It's called the axon, into the little filaments. And here are the boutons at the end of the filaments. And here is the next nerve cell. And these are the dendrites, the receiving stations. So what happens is the the chemical messengers come in. So these are the neurotransmitters, the chemical messengers. They come into the cell, they're encapsulated in the cell. They're sent down the arm and then they're released into the boutons where they release out to the next nerve cell. In a crisis, that can even be travelling at 200 miles an hour. What caffeine does is it disrupts or interferes with the chemical messengers. One is adenosine. And adenosine is a neurotransmitter that acts like the brakes. Our brain runs according to precision balance. It must have brakes. And when caffeine goes in, adenosine levels drop. That means brakes are failing. So very quickly, the brain develops extra receptor sites on the dendrites to grab every bit that comes through in an attempt to maintain the balance. And then they come to your health retreat. You don't serve any coffee. Adenosine levels go back to normal. Receptor sites get flooded. Oh, does that hurt? No one suffers like the coffee drinker. We've had people come off methamphetamines, heroin, methadone, alcohol, cigarettes. No one suffers like the coffee drinker. Intense. And we can never predict. We had one girl coming off 10 cups a day. I said to the staff, keep your eye on that girl. And we'd say, how are you? She'd say, oh, I've got a slight headache, that's all. And then we had another lady come to the retreat. I said, what's the reason for your coming? I always ask their reason for coming and I write down exactly what they say. Because then in the final chat, I want to go right there. Why did they come? She said, well, I'm here to support my husband. She said, I didn't really want to come to your retreat because I don't want to give up my three friends. I said, what are your three friends? She said, caffeine. She said, cheese and sugar. I said, ah. Monday night, she was so sick. One cup of coffee a day she has. She was vomiting. She had diarrhea. One cup a day. And yet the young woman who was having a 10 a day, hardly a headache. But that young woman was very, very fit. And she was 30. The other woman, who didn't want to come because of her three best friends, she actually called them her three best friends, she suffered keenly. And she was quite overweight and quite unfit. So we worked hard with the hot foot baths and did what we can. By Tuesday, she was quite good. The end of the week, I said, do you still call them your three best friends? Because if they're best friends, I don't want best friends. And sometimes I think it's good. Now, it sounds terrible that I say it's good that I suffer. We don't want anyone to suffer. But sometimes that is necessary to prove to them how dangerous this thing is. And again, it's very difficult to assess. But we have found, and Dr. Neil Nedley's research also showed this, that the women suffer more than the men. So you can have a woman suffering like this lady did, and then you can have another man having five cups of coffee a day. He stops, says, there hardly seems to be a reaction. Does that mean it's okay for him? No. He's getting a effect from his caffeine, but it could be in other areas. The other neurotransmitter that's affected is acetylcholine. And acetylcholine is a neurotransmitter that has to do with brain function, and it rises when a person has a cup of coffee. But very quickly the brain says, whoa, we've got too much acetylcholine now. Stop making so much acetylcholine. That's why Professor Walter Veith says, if you're going to come to my exam after you've had a cup of coffee, he says, don't come. Because when you come into the exam room, you're going to think that your brain's sparky and you're going to do very well. But he says within half an hour, wow, we have a saying in Australia, not the sharpest knife in the drawer, you know, just not running on all cylinders. The other neurotransmitter is dopamine. And dopamine is your pursuit of reward, your pursuit of happiness hormone, and it rises in a crisis. So when a person is having, say, 3 cups of coffee a day, can you see the constant disruption to their neurotransmitters and the constant exhaustion to the dopamine? We had a young woman about 30 attend one of our health programs in Alabama. And on Tuesday, they come in on Sunday. On Tuesday, she said to me, "Oh, I forgot to tell you that I'm on speed." I said, "Oh." Remember the R? She said, "I stopped yesterday and I have no energy today." I said, "That's right." You can say that's right then because that's right. She said, "And I'm telling you now that if I go home and have no energy, I'm going to go back on the speed." And that's when I went, "Ah." I said, "Where do you think the energy's coming from?" She said, "Well, in the speed, in the tablets." I said, "Well, if it was, the bottle would be jumping all around the table." She looked at me. I said, "The energy that you're getting from that speed is tomorrow's energy. No wonder you have no energy today. You used it up all yesterday when you took the speed." "Oh," she says. "Oh." And I said, "And what do you think it's doing to your neurotransmitters?" I said, "You're 30, I guess you want to have a baby one day." She said, "Yeah." I said, "What sort of gene pool are you going to give the baby if you continue on this speed?" "You're going to give a gene pool to that baby, which means they will be prone to attention deficit syndrome, hyperactivity, autism." She said, "Oh." I said, "Yep." Next day she said, "I've thrown them in the bin." I said, "Good, that's a very good choice." That was Wednesday. Thursday, she said, "I'm feeling a little bit more energy today." I said, "That's good." She went home a very happy lady. So you've got to appeal to their reason. You're kind, but you're straight. But isn't that speed? Well, caffeine's not as strong as speed, of course, but the way it stimulates your neurotransmitters is similar. If someone wanted to conquer Sydney, all they'd have to do is stop the coffee. You'd have a nation nearly crippled. Yes?
What is speed?
Speed is a drug that people take to get speed. Speed. I don't know. Lydia, you might know the technical name. I don't know. No, no. It's not the same as heroin, but it's a drug that a lot of people take recreational, and it's exactly what the word says, speed. But that's what the drug will do. It would stimulate this, but in a greater way. But I use it as an illustration of that's what caffeine does, in maybe slightly milder.
Amphetamine.
Mm-hmm. Now this information helps your guests to make the decision not to have coffee. And also, by the time you give them this information, because you're down here on your presentations on the laws of health, the headache's usually over. But when I explain that to people, they go, "Ah." And there is a book called Caffeine Blues, and the author in that, he's got a chapter called Coming Off the Bean. And he says if someone's having 3 cups of coffee a day, what they can do is have a cup of coffee, but only half a teaspoon of coffee and another half a teaspoon. Now in Australia we have alternatives to coffee made out of roasted roots. I guess you'd have that there. And they're called, what's their name here? I'll try and say it, but I'll probably say it wrong. But alternate cereal beverage, the roasted roots. So can you see what they're doing? The coffee will taste the same, but it'll only have half the coffee in it. And then the next day, less coffee and more of the cereal beverage. And if they're having 3 cups of coffee a day, within a week, they can be off their coffee without any pain or suffering. So if someone says to me, how can I prepare to come to the health retreat? I say, start easing off your coffee. Don't stop the coffee or you're going to be a mess. Just start easing off it. If you have one cup a day, have half a cup a day. If you have three cups a day, have three half cups a day. So little by little, ease off it, and they can ease off it without a lot of pain and suffering.
You mentioned roasted barley, I believe.
Pardon?
Roasted barley.
Roasted barley, yep, the roasted roots. Roasted chicory, roasted dandelion, those similar things. We're looking at what should not enter the human body if you're looking at optimum performance. Meat, there's a few reasons why meat is not the best food for humans. We know that God chose not to give us meat in the Garden of Eden. You know, there was no death there. And I say to people, if you're looking forward to meat in heaven, I'm sorry, but there's going to be no death. There has to be a death to get the meat. And when an animal's killed, the body begins to putrefy. That's its breakdown. There's the cycle of life. So they have to act very, very quickly to stop that putrefaction. And dogs' gastrointestinal tracts are about 1 meter long. Humans are 8 meters long. So with a dog, it's in and out quick. But with a human, there's a long process there. And meat has no fiber. It's got no fiber at all. So it's a huge contributing factor to colon cancers, to colon problems. It's also a big contributing factor to cancer because when it breaks down in the body, it gives off a high sulfur waste, which is an acid waste, so contributing. That's a big disease contributor. If people say to me, well, I want to keep eating meat, I say, well, if you ask my advice, I would say your plant-based diet is going to give you much better health. But if you've got a family that are going to eat it, start to have less. So my daughter's partner is an Italian and he's eating meat, you know, every meal. Well, it's a couple of years now and she's got him down to meat once a week. And she did it so slowly, bringing the legumes in. And I've had a few women say that they've been able to do that with their husbands. Also, what should never enter the human body is alcohol. There's no safe dose of alcohol. Alcohol's a neurotoxin. Neurotoxin means brain poison. Do you know what that means? It kills the brain cell. And once the brain cell's dead, it does not regrow. And we need all the brain cells we've got. Alcohol directly damages the brain and also the project manager, which is the liver. The body sees it as a toxic poison. You might know the story of Alexander the Great. He conquered Europe at the age of 33. And then they went into celebrations. And he went from party to party, and every party he went to, he drank the Herculean cup, which apparently was this huge cup of alcohol. He died that night of alcohol poisoning at the age of 33. And I think we know the story. His generals slaughtered his infant sons and basically took over the kingdom. Whew! Wherever you see alcohol around that area, it's not a pretty picture. It's not a pretty picture at all. And tomorrow when we go to the brain, I'll show you how it certainly affects brain function. The other neurotoxin is mercury. The three main places we can be exposed to mercury is in the silver fillings in the teeth. I don't know how they ever got away with that. Doesn't even look nice, does it? And one of the problems with mercury is it's bioaccumulative. Bioaccumulative means the longer it's in the mouth, the more it is accumulating in the tissues. And where you'll get more of the mercury fumes coming off is if the person's chewing gum all day, if the person's having very hot drinks, there's your cups of teas and cups of coffees, that increases the letting off of the mercury. It accumulates in the tissues. And what mercury does, it starts eating away at the myelin sheath. And when that myelin sheath is the protective coating around the arm of the nerve cell. When that's two-thirds gone, there's your multiple sclerosis. So the three places you can be exposed is the mercury fillings in the teeth. Also fish, there's hardly a fish today that doesn't have traces of mercury in it. And because it's bioaccumulative, the bigger the fish, the higher the concentration of mercury. Now, a lot of people have become aware of the danger of the high carbohydrate diet, and in response to that, instead of having sandwiches for lunch, they'll have tuna and salad for lunch. And we had a tuna fisherman do our program. He said, we catch 10-foot tunas. Do you remember what I said? The bigger the fish, the higher the accumulation of mercury. So that's why the health retreats show the people how to make delicious things out of lentils, hummus, olives, looking at the alternatives, the protein alternatives. What's the third place? It can be found in vaccines. In 1998, they banned mercury from the childhood vaccines. It's called Thimisil. And what is terrible to hear is that they had a stockpile. And so even though they banned mercury from childhood vaccinations, for another 10 years, children were still injected because they had a stockpile. If a parent knew what was in that vaccine, I don't think many parents would vaccinate their children. There are still neurotoxins in childhood vaccinations, and that's the formaldehyde and also aluminium. And usually if you ask your health professional about that, they'll say, oh, but they're just in minute amounts. Even a little bit of poison is not a good, it's never a good poison. So they're the three main places. Apparently in Australia, it's in the flu vaccine still. And I was talking to aged care nurses and they said when the flu vaccine goes around, our dementia patients get worse. Sometimes the elderly people die. So they're the places where we can be exposed to mercury, which should never enter the human body. It's a neurotoxin. Tobacco. It is estimated there are about 5,000 chemicals in a cigarette.
Yeah. I had a question in regards to the mercury and the vaccinations. Is it possible to get shingles from it?
Well, the shingles comes from, I think, the chickenpox virus. So, you know, vaccination certainly can, but it's not the mercury that would cause that. It is acknowledged medically now that smoking cigarettes does play quite a large role in atherosclerosis, in heart disease, and remember it's the damage to the arterial wall. And of course you've got, you know, the chemicals that are causing that, but you've also got inhibiting the oxygen uptake. And remember that oxygen, when it is present in the energy cycle, will give 18 times more energy. People that smoke will never attain to mental brilliance because they're lacking those oxygen in the cell, in the brain cell. Drugs never cure disease. They just change the form and location. That indicates the side effects. As the statement I gave you earlier, if the drug doesn't have a side effect, it's not a drug. Didn't drugs come from herbs a long time ago? But what God puts together, let no man take asunder. They would take a part out of that. It's like sugar is a drug. They've just taken a part of it out. There's nothing wrong with a sugar cane. It's what is taken out of it. Same with the drugs. Now, in a crisis, a drug can save a life. I think we certainly can all acknowledge that. My younger sister was knocked over by a drunk driver when she was 18, and we're just so thankful the drug saved her life. Absolutely, we acknowledge that. But notice what the statement says, drugs never cure disease. That's what we're talking about. And every drug has a side effect. There are some drugs that can be stopped immediately, but there are some drugs that have to be eased off. MSG, monosodium glutamate, Monosodium glutamate causes the nerve cells on the tongue to overfire, and when they overfire, the food tastes fantastic. What a worry. Do you know what that means? Rotten food would taste nice if it's got MSG on it. So food poisoning usually happens with someone who's got low hydrochloric acid and the food has got monosodium glutamate on it, so you can't even taste that the food is bad. So that's how it works. It causes the nerve cells on the tongue to overfire, but it causes the nerve cells everywhere to overfire. And when those nerve cells overfire in the brain cells, they can get exhausted even to the point of dying. It's called a excitotoxin. So be very careful on the food that you're buying. Please take the magnifying glass to the supermarket and read everything that's there. You might even have your phone with you so you can quickly find out exactly what this is and that is. But when you eat food in its natural state, you know, you haven't got a problem, have you? So how do you make food taste nice? Good quality vegetables. Did everyone have a taste of those broad beans that were not long picked out of the garden? You don't need anything with them. The flavour's so good. You know what you're tasting? Minerals. Because the soil is so high in minerals, the plant is high in minerals. And I had a strawberry from the garden a few days ago. Oh, it just about explodes in your mouth. And for those who have been walking down to the lake, have you tasted those little wild blueberries? Wow, they're power packed with flavour. It's the minerals. So when you eat food that's organic, as much as possible, it's got so much flavour in it, you don't have to do much to it. And then you add a little bit of Celtic salt, which brings the flavour out. And then you use some fresh herbs. You might have some fresh herbs in your garden. When we go out this afternoon to look at the herbs, you'll see some fresh herbs out there. Just even having thyme and marjoram. Thyme and marjoram are delicious in lentils. And then your basil and your oregano for your tomato dishes. And rosemary. Rosemary gives a nice flavour. Getting to know your fresh herbs. You know, that's all you need when you're making things taste nice. And of course your onions and your garlics and your... And if they're a bit strong, leek is a lot gentler. So on people that can't quite have the garlic or the onion, maybe they've got a very sensitive stomach, the leek is a lot gentler. So there's no need to go to the flavour enhancers. Mould. We're looking at what should not enter the body if you're looking for optimum performance. God says if there's mould in the house, destroy it. But actually he doesn't say destroy it until he says try and fix it up first. And it often can be fixed up. One lady told me she used to get mould in her bathroom and she put a fan in the bathroom. Keep your fan on, you know, for 10 minutes after your shower. Because her bathroom didn't have a window. So open the window wide in the bathroom, because build-up of moisture and steam can certainly trigger mould growth. So make sure there's no mould in the house. And electromagnetic field excess. We are electrical people. There's a spark of electricity in every cell in the body. And the frequency of our electromagnetic field is totally different to the frequency of the devices. So when those devices are next to the body, touching the body too much, you're going to get a problem. A man in America told me that his daughter was a nurse. And she always had a uniform with an apron right here, and she always had her phone there. And she got uterine cancer. And he believes that it was a big contributing factor to the cancer she developed there. And we had a lady come with a brain tumour, and it was right over her right ear. And her family said, whenever you see her, she's got a phone always next to her ear. She came to us. She'd already had some treatment. She'd had some radiotherapy to try and shrink the tumour. She came to us and she was in her 60s, and we discovered that she her bowels weren't working. She went once a week. So we got those working. We got her on a plant-based diet. We got her drinking more water. She couldn't talk. Her head was on the side and she was shaking a little bit, but she could smile. Now, when her daughter took her home, she was with us 2 weeks, her doctor could not believe the change. They did a scan on her brain, or we did the castor oil compress on. Now, I think this is 6 months later they did the scan, and the tumour was gone. Well, what's the damage that she has? The damage was from the radiotherapy. So if she'd never had radiotherapy, she may have totally recovered. So they believed that it was the phone that was doing that.
Do you have any experience with these technologies of shielding, like the whole house? Even if the Wi-Fi, and then you have the...
Yeah, you can get devices that shield. That's absolutely true. I think there's one device that actually draws it all to it. So you can search that out. One man told me that where his meter box was in their bedroom, and he discovered that if he painted lead paint, but it was in a way that was not going to hurt them, but it stopped it. It's black, but you can paint over the black wall. So there, you can investigate, and there are things you can do. I'll bring my phone down and show you. I've got a safe sleeve on my phone, and so I've got something metal in there. It's like a flip top, and it stops all electromagnetic field going into me. So there are a few things you can do, yeah?
What about Bluetooth?
Bluetooth, I cannot say because I do not know. So you'd have to search that one out. Now, the worst place to put your laptop is where?
On your lap.
Protect the family jewels. So men are having low sperm count. Men are having trouble with erections. Men are having several sexual problems who have had that laptop on their lap, especially when it's through their developing years, you know, in their adolescence, teenage years. One young man came with testicular cancer. He was 30 and he drove a little sports car, and he always had his laptop on his lap, and he'd be while he's driving along. Also, there are figures that show that girls that have laptops on their lap in their adolescence, teenage years, then when they're in their 30s, 47% miscarriage in those girls who had the laptops on their laps when they were developing. So it's obviously affecting the developing eggs. I was also reading the report of a breast surgeon, and he said it's alarming the amount of young women who are getting breast cancer, and they're getting breast cancer in the breast where they put the phone into their bra. A lot of women that train do that. You can even buy a sports bra today with a pocket in it to put the phone in that area. So all of these are illustrations of how this electromagnetic field is not good for our body. It's called the silent killer, because you can't see it. So be particularly careful with the children. I'm going to give you the Russian standards for exposure with children with electromagnetic field. The Russian standard is under the age of 2-0. And how many people, I see it on the plane all the time, they give the child the phone to keep them quiet. Do you know, in the old days, we gave the boys matchbox cars and read them a story, and the girls had their dolls. And what about after two? Well, the Russian standard is between the age of 2 and 5, about 5 minutes a day. Getting up to a 10-year-old, half an hour a day, 15-year-old, an hour a day, 18-year-old, up to 3 hours a day. They're scary figures. because Russians want to protect the next generation. So be very careful on the exposure of the children. You see, their brains are still developing and the skull is not as thick as the adult skull. And so the electromagnetic field goes almost twice as far into the brain compared to an adult. So be careful of the electromagnetic fields. We love them, we use them, and I certainly do. But please be aware of your exposure and please be aware of how close it is to your body. It's a very socially acceptable list, isn't it? There's no need for me to talk about the dangers of methamphetamines, the dangers of cyanide, arsenic, but there's definitely a need to be aware of the dangers of this very socially acceptable list. We find that this lecture is very important for the guests because many people that come to our retreat are doing all of this. And it doesn't work to say you shouldn't do it, it's not good for you. But when you explain to them what these things are doing, and then come in and show them how they can detoxify from it, show them how they can do alternatives. What we say to our guests, because we do 2 days juices and then the rest of the week it's breakfast like a king, lunch like a queen. We say what happens to your body in 1 week would take 6 months on a good diet. So that makes it impressive because you're speeding up everything. And remember your organs of elimination, your steam saunas, helping to get it out via the skin, the waste, more water, urinary, also aiding them with eliminating via the colon. So when we go on our journey through the gastrointestinal tract, we will be looking at some of the things that can be done for that. This is the law that most people don't want to talk about. But as I've shown you, if you don't turn the tap off, you're still going to be mopping up in the other corner. So Ellen White says, in the case of sickness, what's the first thing?
Ascertain the cause.
Ascertain the cause. What's the next thing?
Wrong habits.
Wrong habits corrected. What's the next one? Unhealthful conditions changed. The only hope of better things is the education of the people in right principles. Many people don't realise the danger of these. How many people think a little bit wouldn't hurt you? Most. But like the dripping tap on a stone, it's building up. And an excellent illustration is this. There's a lot of little threads that come together to make a strong rope. And a strong man cannot break that rope. But a little tiny mouse that a strong man could just step on and kill in a moment, a little tiny mouse can come along and start eating away at the threads. And that's what you'll find with many people. It's stress, it's lack of water, it's a fast food diet, grabbing the carbs because they're hungry, no time to exercise, going to bed too late, living on this to give them a little bit of a peck. Pick up. There we are. You see, having caffeine is like taking out a loan to pay off your loan. So it's good to have illustrations to show that. It might give you a pick up. What's the other saying? Buy now, pay later. That's what it is with a lot of these. And it could also be just never in the sunshine. Vitamin B's terribly lacking. No fresh air. So they're all your little threads. So to bring about healing, you've got to connect all the little threads. So when you investigate, then you'll start to see, it's a bit of this, it's a bit of this. And do you remember the fourth? Then nature is to be assisted. It's probably not. in her efforts to expel impurities and re-establish right conditions back in the system. But you know what? There's no good assisting nature unless this has been dealt with. It's an incredible sentence, isn't it? In fact, it's everything that we need. So I'm the one that chooses. Basis of freedom is free choice. So that's the if there. I am the one that chooses not to take these things. I'm the one that chooses how much food I eat, how much I work, how much I play. The body will heal itself if you give it the right conditions. If it's not healing, why not? And give it time. Nature's process of healing and upbuilding is gradual, says page 127 of the Ministry of Healing. And to the impatient, it seems slow. I memorized that when I jumped out of a plane for my daughter's 19th birthday. I was 49. She wanted me to do a skydive with her for her birthday. So I did. We jumped from 12,000 feet. Heights don't bother me at all. Certainly was fun. But when I came to land, I'm connected to this man. He's behind me. We're connected. And I'm supposed to hold my knees up. And he's got heavy boots on and he'll take the fall. So I'm holding my knees up. And then the wind blew us a little to the side, and my reaction was to put my foot out. And my right foot took the weight of the fall and his weight and my weight, and I heard pop. And then I had excruciating pain. And then I rolled around the ground, biting my finger. Takes the edge off. Anyway, I was on crutches for 7 weeks, so I memorized that sentence. Nature's process of healing and upbuilding is gradual. And to the impatient, it seems slow. Certainly does. So what happened? Well, they took me into hospital. The doctor looked at my leg. I could wiggle all my toes. I could put my ankle up and down. And I said, it's not broken. I'll be right. He said, you should have an x-ray. And I said, no, I'll be right, because I was flying to America the next day, so my big son Peter just carried me out to the car. I went home and put a potato poultice on it overnight. Went on the plane with a fresh potato poultice and crutches. Oh, did they hurt under there. Going like this, and they said, is it sore? I said, no, it's my armpits. On the plane, oh, after a couple of hours, when I'd get up to go to the bathroom, it really started to hurt. And they said, have you got painkillers? I said, just bring me ice. Just bring me ice. So I managed it. So I'm with my daughter for a few weeks, and I'm not going to have an x-ray in America because it costs a fortune. And so I just did hot and colds, poultices, laid on my back, doing bicycling in the air. And got home after 5 weeks and went and had an x-ray. And the doctor said, there's absolutely nothing wrong with your leg. You should be walking. Who am I going to listen to? Doctor or that? And when he sat in front of me and pushed my foot, it didn't hurt. He said, you should be walking. But when I got up to walk, oh, it was that deep pain. You know, the pain that says, don't do that. And so a friend visited. She's a vet. She said, we're smarter than doctors because we have to think for dumb animals. She said, I think I know what happened. And she said, an x-ray won't show this. She said, when you landed, she said, you cracked your talus bone. So your tibia and your fibula sit on the talus bone and it's like a disc. And when you x-ray it, all you see is the side of the disc. She said, that'll take 10 weeks to heal. So I kept doing the hot and colds and the poultices, and after 7 weeks, I started little by little and I could put my weight on it. And because of all I did to that leg, it has not given me one moment of trouble. And that was 20 years ago now. Yes, 20 years ago. 20 years ago next month that I did that. When you get an injury, if it's handled right, your body can almost be stronger after it. I read the story of a guy he was a boxer, and he was in a fight one night, and they slashed his right arm, which was his boxing arm. He was stitched up. Surgery does a wonderful job, stitched it up. And then he went to a physiotherapist who showed him how to build it up. And he said that arm became stronger. So when an injury is given the right conditions, it can even turn out to be quite a strength. So it was that experience that caused me to memorize nature's process of healing and upbuilding is gradual. And to the impatient, it's slow. So sometimes we just need a time factor. I got an email yesterday from a lady who's been on the antifungal diet for a couple of months, and she said, "What am I doing wrong? I'm not getting better. She said, "I think I found the problem." She said, "I looked into the tip of my kettle and I can see something growing there." And she sent me a picture and she thinks it's mold. I wrote back and said, "Looks like bean sprouts to me." I don't know what it is. But I said, she said she just cried. I said, "Don't cry. This could be the reason why you're not seeing results." But I said, one lady I know, it took her 18 months to conquer her yeast problem that she'd struggled with for 30 years. Sometimes you just need time. 30 years. Problem healed in 18 months. The good news is it doesn't take 30 years to undo. And that's a good thing to say to people. But it might take a year or two. One writer said, take a month for every year you've done it wrong. But we want to be ready in a minute. My daughter Emma said to me when she was six, she said, "Mum, I'm going to grow up in a minute." And isn't that what we want? We want to be better in a minute. So it's assessing that too when people are healing. Are there any questions before we close? Yes.
What about refined salt?
What about refined salt? Refined salt is only two minerals, and those two minerals are sodium chloride, and they're very harsh. And if they were to inject it into the person, they would kill the person. So we should be having whole salt. When we look at salt and water, I think that's next week, I'll be showing you exactly what it does in the cell. If I'm traveling and we have restaurant meal and I need salt, I'll put sodium chloride on my meal, but I rarely use it. I'll only use it if there's nothing else. So we should, and I think the illustration that seawater is 92 minerals, Celtic salt is 82 minerals, Himalayan salt is 75 minerals, sodium chloride's two minerals, and it's been bleached, and it's had aluminium put in it to run freely. So just that illustration alone shows the danger of refined salt, and it certainly can contribute to the hardening of the arteries. It's a very harsh salt, and it kills the taste buds. Isn't that incredible? Yeah?
Some of the things on the no side is things that you never would put in your mouth anyway, but there are some things that you might do. You come to a party and they, you know, sugar things.
But I don't do that, but in the health retreat, you will find most of your guests are doing this. And I know that I'm preaching to the converted here, but you're going to be starting retreats and you're going to be sharing these things with the people. And so rather than say you shouldn't do that, you need to show them why they shouldn't do it. But where the converted are probably more at fault are is overdoing the good things or underdoing the good things. Yeah?
You talked about easing off medication, drugs. Which medications would you say that are most important to keep an eye on?
Probably the two main medications that caution has to be used with is the mind-altering medications. Mind-altering, so they're your antidepressants, your panic attack medications, and cortisone, prednisones. That also has to be used with great caution. A lady rang me up and said, Barbara, my husband's been on cortisone for about a year now for various health issues. She said, we're traveling. So I went to a chemist that I've never been to before to get his prescription done. She said when she went to pick up the medication, the chemist came out to her and said, who's on this? She said, my husband. He said, how long's he been on it? She said, a year. He said, does he realise what he's doing to his body? This is the chemist. He gave her all this information on what this medication was doing to his body. When they went home and realised it, he stopped immediately. And that's when she rang me. She said, my husband's a mess. I said, that's right. He'll be a mess, all right. She said, what can he do? I said, he's got to go back on the medication. And he's got to go off it very slowly. And we had one girl come to our retreat and she was on 10 milligrams of prednisone for rheumatoid arthritis. And she enjoyed the week. And I think it was about midweek, I came in one morning and she was curled up in a ball in the corner of the lounge. I said, what's the matter? She said, I stopped my medication yesterday. I said, you can't do that. You can't do that. So she's on 10 milligrams and she totally stopped it. She said, what can I do? I said, you've got to go back on it, but go back on 5 and see what that does. She went back on 5 milligrams and her body was happy. So she was happy. And she'd stopped her anti-inflammatory medication. That's not, you know, but everything she was doing at the retreat, she didn't have the inflammation as much, so she didn't need the anti-inflammatories. She came back a year later. It's an interesting story because she told me she owned 40 pairs of boots. She dressed like a model every day. She was about 40 and slender. And she said, oh, I'm so excited. I'm here because all my friends who are bikies put on a rock concert for me. And the proceeds from the rock concert allowed me to come back. So she was back for another 2 weeks. And as I consulted with her, she said, and I haven't brought any medication. And I said, oh dear. And it wasn't long before she was a mess again. Because when a person's been on cortisone and that stops inflammation, as soon as it stopped, the inflammation comes back big time. So what we had to quickly do, and we lived 2 hours from town, we had to quickly contact her doctor who faxed a script to a chemist, a local chemist, that's a 2 hour drive. And what I suggested, because, you know, she had to talk to her doctor about it, instead of 5 milligrams, do 2.5. And because she hadn't had the 5 milligrams for 24 hours, when she took the 2.5 milligram, her body was happy. Now, if her body wasn't happy, what would we do? We'd just give her another 2.5, bring her back to the 5, but then little by little, take it down. She contacted me and 6 months later, she was off all her medication. And her doctor had told her she would never go under 5. She would have to maintain the 5. But you see, her doctor doesn't know this. He doesn't know what this does. He doesn't know the power of turmeric. Turmeric is a fantastic herb for inflammation. So that was also an interesting story to show it. I also had a girl in a mess at the end of the program. I said, what have you done? She said, I've stopped taking my antidepressants. Woo! I said, well, I want you to stay another 2 days. We don't want to send her away like that. And same with that girl, she went back on half her medication. And if that didn't work, what would you do? You'd go back on 4. and then show her how at a later date she can start easing off. Anyway, that was 15 years ago now, and that girl's 40 now, and she has never been on antidepressants in the 15 years since then. She had a troubled childhood, and everything she learned at Misty Mountain allowed her to conquer her troublesome fears. Yeah?
I've read about something called BDNF, which is brain-derived neurotrophic factor, which is something that the body releases if we do fasting, for example, for X number of hours, and that this can help to fix even nerve cells.
That's true. And the good news is that tomorrow in our lecture on the brain, I'm going to define brain-derived neurotrophic factor in detail, and I'll show you exactly how it works and how it can be stimulated and what helps it. So that is true. That is definitely true.
I have a question. When you're, for example, having a cancer patient and he's on some cancer treatments and medication, what are you doing then?
See, that's very difficult. Why is it very difficult? Because the drugs and the natural don't really work together. But we had a lady come with, she had stomach cancer and she was on a lot of pain medication. We don't touch that. But midweek, because we discovered she hadn't been to the toilet for 6 days. So when we started to get the bowels moving, started to give the right condition, her pain levels came down and she could reduce her medication. So that's what you want. You want to get the body into a better working order, which relieves the symptoms, which will basically take away the need for the medication.
How do you start to get the bowel working?
How we start to get the bowel working, the quickest way is an enema. That's the very quickest way. Castor oil compresses on the abdomen, sitting in hot and cold water. And there are different herbs that will get it going. We talked the other day about the seawater flush, the 2 litres of seawater, which is a third seawater, a third hot water and a third cold water. That works with some, it doesn't work with everyone. I think the retreat I was at in England recently, they have a aloe. Now the yellow slime that lines the aloe plant, it is an irritant for the colon, and so you can get some dried aloe that taken will do that. And we have herbs. This afternoon when we look at herbs, I'll go over the herbs that we use for the colon. So there's a variety of things you can do to... I don't want to irritate the colon, I want to gently stimulate the colon. But the quickest way is an enema. You can get relief in half an hour, whereas the herbs may take a little while to work.
Yes. So, you're saying some of these medicines people get don't work. They're not working, they're not healing them. It's like keeping them on.
What I find in a lot of cases is initially the medication is having an effect, but the body gets used to things. And so after a while, it's actually not doing it anymore. And so then the person's confronted with, do they dealt well? They go back to the doctor and he's got a choice of, or she's got a choice of doubling the medication or a couple of different types of medication. Yeah. And that's why I find, see, in Australia, healthcare is free and people don't want to pay to come to a health retreat, but people do because people are getting disillusioned with the drugs and the medical way of treating things. Yeah. Yeah, I had a lady and she said to me, oh, I was told to take this drug and it made me so sick. And I said, why did you stay on it? She said, well, I thought I had to. And she was on it for another year and that did a lot of damage to her. And then I have another lady and she said, well, I was told to take this medication, but it made me so sick, I wasn't going to take that. that, you know, you've got different reactions, and so it's dealing with all of that.
Just if I just give an example, I have a colleague. She was diagnosed with what they called Meniere's
disease, ringing in the ears.
Yeah, and she became quite sick. And then one day, she decided not to take the tablet. And my colleague, Lottie, became fine. And she came back to work and started working. Mm. She was just celebrated her retiring. She's now 72 years.
You know what you've also got? You've got different drugs have different effects on different people. You know, some people, that's why, you know, whether it's a drug, whether it's a herb, whether it's a water treatment, whatever you've got, you're looking for response. And the response is your guide. Time for a break?